You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
In Play Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. A specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. In Play Radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
Hello everyone, welcome along. You're listening to the weekly NFL podcast here with William Hill, week number 10 in the National Football League. Dave Kellner here in the studio in the UK, and as ever, Beating the Book podcast host Gil Alexander on the line live from San Francisco. First of all, it's a good morning, a good Friday morning to Mr. Gil Alexander. How are you doing, Gil?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Good morning to you. I guess good afternoon, good late afternoon to you. Is that how it is?
That's how it is, Gil. 3:10 p.m. UK time here on Friday.
Just 7 in the morning here Pacific time on the West Coast United States. Anything for you, Dave. Anything.
I always respect that, Gil, because I know how difficult I find it to get up in the morning, Gil. So for you to come onto this podcast at 7 a.m. stateside, a healthy dose of respect from this side of the Atlantic.
Well, it's my pleasure, honestly. I joke, but it's my pleasure.
Let's start by reflecting on last night's Thursday night football match and the Buffalo Bills beating the New York Jets. The New York Jets enduring a bit of a slump at the moment, Gil, and they'll be peeved at what happened last night, because Rex Ryan isn't the most popular man in New York, and even though he's been accused of buffoonery in the past, there was something a little bit more sinister about the matchup yesterday when he sent out IK Enemparli as one of his honorary captains. Something a little underlying cynicism there from Rex Ryan.
Yeah, he is a bit of a buffoon, I guess. That's a great word for him. You know, I've probably said this on your show before, if I have, forgive me, but his father was the same way. His father, Buddy Ryan, who was a head coach in the NFL, same way, a lot of bluster, a lot of talk. And then when the games were important, he never won. And his son, Rex, has a little bit of that bluster and perhaps buffoonery. And yesterday what was fascinating was, you know, all week he said, this is just like any other game. It's just so it happens to be the Jets, no big deal. And then as soon as they clinched the game last night, he went crazy on the sidelines. So he admitted, you know, after the game, he's like, oh, yeah, okay, it meant more. You know, it meant a lot. He got fired, so he was real happy to win that game. But I think you're right with the Jets. Not only should they be peeved because it's Rex Ryan, but they should be peeved because they turned the ball over 3 times. They failed to convert on 2 fourth down plays. And in those sequences, just ridiculous passes that could never have gotten the first down from Ryan Fitzpatrick. The Jets did themselves no favors, and Jets backers should be very peeved too, because they probably should have won that game and probably covered.
That's last night. We've got 4 matches we're going to look at, as per usual, on this podcast, and these are the live Sky Sports games over the weekend. And we start with the 6 p.m. Kickoff time on Sunday. The Miami Dolphins at the Philadelphia Eagles. The Dolphins 21-10 on the money line. The Eagles are 2-5, and this spread is set at 6 currently, Gil. The Dolphins plus 6, 10-11. The Eagles minus 6 at 10-11. And we've got a total of 50 on the points line. The under is 10-11. The over is also 10-11. Miami last in the AFC East at the moment, Gil, sitting at 3-5. The Eagles chasing the New York Giants at 4-4 in the NFC East. Philadelphia last weekend came off the bye and beat Dallas in overtime. The Dolphins haven't been able to get any change out of difficult away trips to New England and Buffalo. And following the coaching changes, Gil, in Miami, they have been brought back down to earth quite quickly after a couple of good wins.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very quickly. And, you know, that kind of rah-rah approach, for those who don't know, Dan Campbell replaced Joe Philbin. Joe Philbin was very mild-mannered. Dan Campbell then came in, you know, throwing tantrums, like a typhoon he was in there. And The thing about that is these are professional football players. You might be able to get away with that for a week or two, but it's not sustainable. You know, professional football players are not going to respond to that for an entire season. By the way, it also helped the Dolphins that they were playing really poor competition those first 2 weeks. Mm. And then as soon as they faced the Patriots or better competition, they got sort of punched in the mouth. But that's been the story with Ryan Tannehill's career, really, a theme of Ryan Tannehill's career. This season, let's say this season, Tannehill against the AFC South. That's the worst division in football. That's the one that has the Colts, the Jags, and the Titans in there, among others. Ryan Tannehill against that division, 8 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, he's 2-1. I mean, if he got to play the AFC South all his life, he'd be great. But against the rest of the league, 5 touchdowns against 7 interceptions, and the Dolphins are just 1-4 versus the rest of the NFL, and here they have to play someone who's outside of the AFC South. Let me just warn you in advance here, Dave. Usually I try to paint a nice narrative for these games, and then I come with a logical conclusion to my picks. Here I'm going to sort of paint an anti-Dolphins narrative, and I'm going to go with the Dolphins. This was the game when I do my show Monday where I take a first glance at the lines. I guess them. Before I ever see them, I guess what I think the lines ought to be. This is the one that was most out of whack to me. I just don't know that the Philadelphia Eagles ought to be 6-point favorites, and that's where it opened, and that's where it is, although I see some 5.5s creeping in now. I don't think they're so erratic. They shouldn't be 6-point favorites against anybody. So even though I can list a litany of stats as to why the Eagles are the better football team and might match up well with the Dolphins, as one of my guests likes to say, the spread is the great equalizer, and I think this is too many points to give the Dolphins.
Okay. And you did mention the matchup, and I think a lot of people in the lead-up to this this contest are fixated on the fact that the Miami Dolphins gave up so many rushing yards to the Buffalo Bills last week. I mean, Buffalo ran for 266 yards and 3 touchdowns last week. They only had to throw the ball 12 times, Gil, which is incredible, really. And we've seen Philadelphia in the last 4 or 5 weeks increase their progress in terms of the rushing game. DeMarco Murray and Ryan Matthews starting to work in tandem for the Eagles.
Yeah, we're starting to work in tandem big time for the Eagles. You said a lot of things there. First, one, the Bills last week against these Dolphins, 266 yards, as you mentioned, 3 touchdowns, and the fact they passed just 12 times. You know, I think I pick up on every stat after a week in the NFL, but I didn't pick up on that till I started researching this week's game. I had no idea Buffalo only threw the ball 12 times against the Dolphins, but that's all they had to with those 266 yards on the ground. Those are the most yards gained on the ground by any team this season. And Miami was the first team ever last week, this is in the history of the league, to allow 2 100-yard rushers, a 150-yard receiver in the same game. That's unprecedented. That is so bad, it's not even funny. But, and the other thing you were talking about with the Eagles running game. Well, let's talk about that for a second. The first 4 games of the season, the Eagles are 4-4. Very symmetrical with the Eagles. The first 4 games of the season, they only ran the ball on 9% of their snaps. Now, in the last 4 games, been over 30%. And what has followed is an amazing spike in production on the ground, as you say. 179 yards on the ground with just 2 touchdowns first 4 games. 620 with 6 touchdowns in the last 4. 2.9 yards per carry first 4 games. 5.6 behind Matthews and Murray per carry in the next 4. 28.8 points per game over the last 4 games. While the Dolphins, their defense, opponents are attempting a league-high 31.5 carries per game against them. So, you say to yourself very logically, well, the Eagles ought to be able to go nuts on the ground against the Dolphins. Obviously, the Dolphins are going to game plan for this. My beef with the Eagles is very specific. The fact that, like the Dolphins, they're an erratic team, as I mentioned. Both of these teams, for instance, are in the bottom 4 in the NFL in terms of the third down conversion percentage. That goes a long way to determining outcomes of a game. But the real incriminating part for the Eagles, they're such slow starters, Dave. They put themselves in holes. If you take out 2 of the 6 games in which they scored 41 points in the first half, week 3 and week 6, In those other six games, the Eagles have scored a grand total of 26 first half points. The Dolphins are good lead holders, and the Eagles are slow starters. And I see this game going differently. I see the Dolphins having a really good first half. Maybe that's a play on this game. The Dolphins in the first half is perhaps a solid bet. And I like the Dolphins against the spread for the game. But I think that's where the key is. The Eagles are just terrible starters, and I don't see any reason why they won't be here either.
Okay, the Dolphins plus 6 to play at 10-11. One bit of team news as well that's worth referencing here, Gil. Philadelphia have lost rookie linebacker Jordan Hicks, and that might hurt them to a certain extent.
It's big. Yeah, that's big. You know, the Eagles, though, really good defense with Hicks this season. That shouldn't be minimized, but yes, that will help the Dolphins for sure.
On to the 9:05 p.m. UK start time, the Minnesota Vikings at the Oakland Raiders. The Vikings on the money line are 13-10, the Raiders 4-6. And the spread here, the Vikings plus 3 with extra juice at 20-23, and the Raiders are minus 3 at 20-21. This is the NFC North versus the AFC West. It's a game I'm looking forward to, Gil, with two young and improving franchises here and led by two quarterbacks that were drafted in the 2014 draft. The Vikings 6-2 in the NFC North, with Oakland at 4-4 in the AFC West, but chasing in vain Denver in that division, you would imagine. I think we should start with the quarterbacks here, Gil, because both hugely improved quarterbacks, or improving quarterbacks, in Teddy Bridgewater and Carr. Unfortunately, we'll get to see both on the field on Sunday night as well.
Yeah, I think along with Arizona-Seattle, I think this is one of the two most interesting games of the weekend in the NFL. And let's go to those quarterbacks. I'll follow your lead, as you say. You know, the 2014 draft, so not this year's draft, but last year's draft, there were four quarterbacks taken early. Well, three in the first round and then a fourth early in the second, and they were as follows. With the third pick in the draft, Jacksonville took Blake Bortles. I think they're pretty happy with Blake Bortles still at this point. With the 22nd pick in the draft, the Browns picked Johnny Manziel, which at the time was the sexiest pick of the draft, even though a lot of people had doubts as to whether or not he'd be a good pro, even though he was a great collegiate player. The last pick in the first round, at 32, the Vikings took Teddy Bridgewater. And the fourth pick in the second round at 36, the Raiders took Derek Carr. So the Vikings and Raiders are really happy with their picks. Which of those four do you think is the team that wish they had it back? It's obviously the Browns, who are killing themselves having taken Johnny Manziel at 22. They could have had either of these guys. So the Vikings and Raiders, where they picked these guys, I mean, every team in the league, in other words, had a shot to draft either Bridgewater or Carr, but did not. And a lot of them are kicking themselves.
Absolutely, I agree. And they've got very different styles, haven't they? Very different profiles, these quarterbacks. Derek Carr's a more traditional pocket passer, whereas Teddy Bridgewater, he's a player with those intangibles, Gil. I suppose when you're thinking about longevity and the future of these franchises, you might rather have a Carr under center than a Bridgewater, perhaps.
I don't know. You know, I think it's way too early to tell that. The one thing that's obviously interesting is that we talk in the NFL about the Jay Cutler face or the Eli Manning face, and how as fans, when we watch them, how annoyed we can get with them. In the case of Cutler, because he just looks like a horrible human being who doesn't care. In the case of Manning, we somehow can't figure out how he won two Super Bowls looking like he's just confused out there. Teddy Bridgewater is one of these guys who looks like he might be asleep while he's playing football. You really do wonder if he ever started playing poorly, if people would turn on him because of the impression they have him. But he's so calm, and he seems to be unflappable, which obviously serves the quarterback position so well. Now, it helps him that he's got Adrian Peterson behind him. That's the big difference, right? He can rely on a running game. He is not asked to do nearly as much as the Raiders ask Derek Carr to do. And Derek Carr has responded, 19 touchdown passes against just 4 interceptions. By the way, 4 touchdown passes for Carr in each of his last 2 games. He's on pace for 4,000 yards passing in just his second season in the league. That is awesome. And he's got a great tandem of receivers in Amani Cooper and Michael Crabtree. I mean, just a great pair of receivers. So the Oakland offense is spectacular behind Carr. Their problem, Dave, of course, is that their defense is a mess. They gave up 597 yards to the Steelers last week, and they're giving up over 26 points a game. So that's the Achilles heel of the Raiders.
And that's what that's what makes this matchup so intriguing, isn't it? Because Oakland, as you mentioned, they've been involved in some wild shootouts recently with the San Diego Chargers and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Here they come up against the sixth best pass defense in the league. It's how they managed to find holes in that Minnesota Vikings secondary. And whether or not, with Teddy Bridgewater, Minnesota can attack Oakland and really pinpoint their weakness in this matchup.
Yeah, I guess if you're looking for an edge with the Vikings, if you were looking to back the Vikings, one of the things that I guess you could say is that the Raiders' offensive coordinator is Bill Musgrave. Bill Musgrave is highly respected, but where was Bill Musgrave before he was in Oakland? He was with the Vikings for the last 4 years as their offensive coordinator from 2011 to 2014. So you might follow then that the Vikings defense might have a bit of a beat on how Musgrave thinks and on what he might want to do at certain points in a game. So I think that's probably... certainly doesn't hurt the Vikings, that's for sure, and it may very well help them in this matchup. Their defense has been great, the Vikings. They've given up just 17.5 points a game, second best in the league. That's after allowing 30 points a game just 2 years ago, which was the worst in the NFL. But the Raiders' offense, again, they've scored 106 points the last three games, averaging 35.3. Last year they had 109 points entering week 9 after 8 weeks of the season. So it's a very interesting game. Oakland is the favorite at home. It's a coin, you know, it's a 3-point spread because that's just one of those games. You know, you get 3 points for home field in the NFL, and that's how odds makers do it anyway. And so this is essentially a game the odds makers just threw out at 3 and said, "Have at it, people. It's not coming off 3. It really isn't coming off 3 because for all the reasons we've talked about, what's going to give? Is it going to be the Minnesota defense giving to the Oakland offense? Is it going to be the Oakland offense giving to the Minnesota defense? And then can Minnesota just move the ball at will against the Raiders? I mean, if you really pushed me here, I'll take the points in these situations every time.
The Minnesota Vikings +3, if you're leaning in that Vikings-Raiders clash. That's the Sunday 9:05 p.m. UK start time. Let's move on to prime time. Gil, and Sunday night football, early hours of Monday morning here in the UK. We have the Arizona Cardinals at the Seattle Seahawks. 7-5 on the money line, the Cardinals. The Seahawks are 5-8. And this one set at 3 as well, Gil. The Cardinals +3 are 20-21. The Seahawks -3 with the extra juice here at 20-23. This is, Gil, as you referenced, the most eagerly awaited clash this weekend, and a lot of people will be drawing parallels with the Cardinals last year and the points they were at in their season when they came up against the Seahawks back in November and got beaten, and then the Seahawks beat them again in December, and the whole narrative turned on the back of that one game last November. But the Cardinals healthy this year, and that might be the difference maker.
Remember, the Cardinals were 9-1 last year when they played the Seahawks. But, you know, that was a combination at that point afterwards of Drew Stanton and the absolutely horrific Ryan Lindley, who should not have been behind center as an NFL quarterback. Carson Palmer, as long as he's been playing since the beginning of last year, well, the Cardinals are 12-2 since he's been playing. But that was the big difference. He will be playing, obviously, here now. He was out last year because he had suffered a torn ACL just 2 weeks prior to that first loss against the Seahawks. So the Cardinals were a different team last year. We knew they were going to fade even after that great start, and they did. And Seattle, of course, got all the way to the Super Bowl and, you know, 1 yard away from actually winning it, as we know famously. But you look at this year. I think the story of the Cardinals, Dave, and by the way, both teams are coming off byes here, and this is really a referendum on the Seahawks. If the Seahawks lose here, not only are they not in playoff position, they're going to be below 500. So this is huge for the Seahawks. So the Cardinals this year, though, You know, second in scoring, 32.9 points, fourth in total offense and passing yards. Chris Johnson's having maybe the second best year of his career at the age of 30, which is just unbelievable to fathom. 6.7 yards per play, the Cardinals' offense, that's the best in the NFL. 8.9 yards per pass attempt, that's the best in the NFL. But the key is that they've done it against competition that you would expect them to excel against. This game against Seattle starts a stretch for the Cardinals. We're going to learn a lot about this team because they're going to face Cincinnati next week after this. Then they're going to have to, down the stretch, face the Rams, the Vikings, who we talked about, the Eagles, who we talked about, Green Bay. All those four games are going to be in succession. And then they have to play Seattle again, as we just talked about, late in the year, at the last game in January, on January 3rd. So this is big. It's fascinating from so many ways, not only a betting perspective, because is Arizona really a mirage? Are they for real now that they'll have to face much tougher competition? And on the flip side, is Seattle just not that good? And, of course, we can talk about them some more now.
Yes, they've been sensational in throughout Russell Wilson's career at home. They've been incredible. 28-3 is his home record. However, they're 4-4, as you mentioned, in the NFC West. They trail this Arizona Cardinals franchise by two clear games, and they haven't looked as good this season. I don't know what's happened, Gil. Maybe you can shed some light on it, but they don't appear to be the same side we saw last season in the National Football League.
Well, or the last couple years, right? I mean, you're right. 28-3 at home, including the playoffs. Remember that trade they made in the offseason when they traded Max Unger, their center, to the New Orleans Saints for Jimmy Graham, tight end? And, you know, the Seahawks' issues was we don't have a great tight end option. It'll be great for Russell Wilson to have that option. And we don't do very well in the red zone. Having Jimmy Graham will be phenomenal. Well, that has not worked out at all. Carson Palmer's fourth in red zone total QBR when the Cardinals have the ball at the 20-yard line or closer to the end zone. Fourth in total QBR, 16 touchdowns, zero picks for Carson Palmer. Russell Wilson is 28th in red zone total QBR. He just has three touchdowns with one pick. And Jimmy Graham has just one touchdown for the Seahawks in the red zone. They've gone a half a season with their acquisition, and he has had barely an impact for the Seahawks. By the way, in contrast, Carson Palmer has a tight end that no one's heard of named Troy Nicholas. He has two touchdowns in the red zone. That gives you an idea about how futile Jimmy Graham's performance has been. The other issue is, and I talk about the Max Unger side of that trade, and I could quote you stats about how great the Seahawks were when Max Unger was on the field on the ground last year in terms of yards per carry versus when Max Unger was injured as a member of the Seahawks. Their rushing production fell off a cliff. So it's not surprising that they don't have him now when they don't have him at all, that they're just struggling, period. And seven sacks last year in the game against Arizona, that's how many Russell Wilson took in that game. But the first seven games this year, he took 31 quarterback sacks. Now, he didn't 2 weeks ago against Dallas. They didn't take any. But that's going to go a long way towards determining the outcome of this game. Can they protect Russell Wilson? Because the first seven games of this year, he was just getting crushed.
What's your gut feeling, Gil?
I'll take the point. I think the wrong team is favored here. I think this 3 points, a lot of this is because, listen, we've become acclimated to the fact that the Seattle Seahawks are, for the last couple years, a juggernaut in the National Football League. And at home in particular, we look at that team and we say how great they are. But the fact is that they're not good this year. They're not. Keep in mind, they didn't look great against a Jay Cutler-less Chicago team at home for a half. And then by luck, by a referee not making a call, they were able to beat the lowly Detroit Lions at home this season. So now you got Arizona. Arizona's going to score points. Seattle's not going to shut them down. They may shut them, you know, they may minimize the amount of points. Maybe Arizona's not going to score as many as they have been per game. But Arizona's going to score points, and I just don't think Seattle's going to be able to keep up with them.
I agree. Arizona Cardinals plus 3 at 20-21. Just before we move on to the Monday night football game, Gil, I was reading some quotes from a Bruce Arians interview as well, with the Cards head coach, and he was talking about his work with Carson Palmer, and it was refreshing just to hear him simplify things. And he was saying that he sits down with Carson Palmer before the game, and they go through maybe 20 plays they'll run on first down, 20 players they'll run on third down, and then they'll pick one, because he said it's not about coaching the absolute best play, it's making your quarterback comfortable with the play, and that's the key to quarterback coaching. It was nice to hear him, refreshing to him simplify things, really, Gil.
Yeah, and I think if you extend that, Dave, and you take it to young quarterbacks, and you think about guys like Colin Kaepernick or Robert Griffin III, who are guys who have the skill set to really tuck the ball under and run the football and are not necessarily pass-first guys, although Robert Griffin, when healthy, was a tremendous passer his rookie year, it extends the fact that some of these coaches want to make these guys into something that they're not. And, yeah, being comfortable, being able to do things successfully, God, it seems so simple, doesn't it? But these NFL coaches, man, they have egos, like my way or the highway, and it doesn't serve them well, and I agree with you. I think Bruce Arians really gets it.
The Monday night football match this weekend is the Houston Texans at the Cincinnati Bengals. The Texans 15-4 here. The Bengals 2-11 on the money line. The spread, the Texans plus 10.5 at 10-11. The Bengals minus 10.5 at 10-11. Have we had any line movement here, Gil?
Yeah, a little. Started Cincinnati minus 12 and has gone to 10.5. And as we like to say, while that's a point and a half movement, it's a point and a half of movement in sort of a no man's land of numbers. It's not crossing any key number. So, yes, there's been movement. Doesn't really mean a whole lot, though, between 12 and 10.5.
It figures to be quite one-sided, this matchup, Gil, with the Bengals at 8-0 in their division, and the Texans sitting at 3-5 in the lowly AFC South. However, things are rarely as they seem in the National Football League, and 10.5, it strikes me as a lot of points for a team that will be ramped up coming off a bye week.
Yeah, they'll be ramped up. They are coming off a bye week, but the Bengals are coming off 10 days rest themselves, so it's not like they don't have extra rest. Boy, we were having such good matchups until this one. Huh? we almost ran the table. This, you're right. I mean, things aren't always as they seem in the NFL. I think that's a good way to say things. This is tough, though, because Bengals are really good. You know, Bengals just a good football team, and I just don't think Houston has it. If you were looking for, let's just start with what could Houston probably hang their hat on here, and I think it's their quarterback, Brian Hoyer. I was mentioning on my shows this week that there's always a game during an NFL season where when you look back on it, you sort of shake your head like, what happened that day? Well, we just have to kind of throw that one out. For instance, the Jets earlier this year against the Raiders, it was one thing that Geno Smith was called into action. It was an entirely different thing that the Jets defense, which again looked, you know, pretty good last night, although, you know, it had its problems last night too after Buffalo got that special teams touchdown. But there was a game against the Raiders earlier this year where the Jets just forgot how to tackle. And I think we'll look back on that game and we'll be like, what was that? So last year I think that game was the Thursday night game when the Browns came into Cincinnati and they just crushed the Bengals. Andy Dalton threw three interceptions, and Brian Hoyer was the quarterback of the Browns, and he did quite well, didn't throw any picks. So this is Brian Hoyer starting for the Houston Texans now. And so I do think that Houston backers can say to themselves, well, at least our quarterback we know is not going to be intimidated by the stage. He's already coming to Cincinnati in a primetime game, and he's performed very well. So he won't be flustered at all by this stage. That's for sure. And that ends my Houston pro commentary.
I think if this game was maybe on a Sunday as well, just a normal daytime game on a Sunday, Gil, it would be more of an inverted commas a trap spot for Cincinnati, and they might ease down and take this lightly. Yeah. But with this being prime time, you'd think they'll want to make another statement.
I agree. I think that's a good point. I think it's the national stage. You're the only game that's on TV at that time, and you know these are human beings. That means something to them. If it's mired in a Sunday, especially because Cincinnati knows after this, they got a game against Arizona, right? This is the quote-unquote look-ahead spot. But it's Monday night, so that erases that. Mm-hmm. The Bengals are just, you know, they're good. Look, the Bengals' one Achilles heel is the fact that they've given up a lot of yards per carry on the ground. They're really bad. They're at the bottom of the NFL in that category. But it just so happens that that's the worst thing the Texans do, is run the football. They only get 3.3 yards per rush. So even the one spot where they might be able to exploit, the Texans really don't have the personnel to do that. Yet, the Texans do have something to play for. As bad as the Texans have been at 3-5, they're only a half game back of first place Indianapolis in that AFC South that we talked about. I just don't think they're going to be able to keep up with Andy Dalton, though, who, you know, despite his playoff problems, four losses in four seasons, 0-4 in the playoffs, and that's what's going to determine the Bengals' legacy again, this regular season he's been great. 18 touchdowns, four picks, a 139.8 passer rating, that's second only to the great Tom Brady, and Tyler Eifert, who we have mentioned many times on this show. What a receiving blanket, security blanket he has become for Dalton. 37 catches for Eifert, 9 touchdowns. That's the most among tight ends. And although J.J. Watt is still back there for the Texans, and he can always create havoc, and he has the last two games with 4.5 sacks, just don't think he's going to be enough.
Now, out of all the problems with the Texans' offense then, Gil, do you think if they can, and if they can sort out their offense, as if it's not 50% of the play, do you think they'll look like a better franchise next season? Because a lot's been leveled against the defense, but they're still, J.J. Watt's still productive, and Jadeveon Clowney, even though he's struggling with fitness, and Brian Cushing, they should have a good unit there, a solid unit defensively. It's on the other side of the ball in which they really need help.
That's absolutely right. They could use a little help in the secondary of the defense, but yeah, they have those three key cogs on the defense. Though Clowney here is day-to-day, I'm not sure if he's going to be able to play or not. We shall see. He has a little back issue. But, you know, the secondary deserves, that the pass defense deserves a little, they should get a little help back there. But yes, the defense is not the problem. It's the offense, and they've had injuries. Look, Arian Foster may never play again. He was plagued by injuries in the last few years, and then he ruptured his Achilles earlier this year. So I don't know that we'll ever see him play again. And Alfred Blue is, you know, he's kind of just there. I don't know that he's a great NFL starting quarterback. So if they can get the rushing game going in next, you know, future years, next year specifically, they'll be a better football team. Just doesn't help them this Monday, though.
Are you going with Bengals? Are the Bengals minus 10.5 then, Gil?
I am. I'm going to give the point. The one game this week where I'm going to give a whole bunch of points. I think the key here is that on passes that travel more than 15 yards past the line of scrimmage, and I get this from Mike Sando over at ESPN, Dalton has just been great this year. 29 of 49, 59.2%. That's a career high. It leads the NFL. 15 yards past the line of scrimmage before it reaches its intended target, that is. By contrast, just one more completion in that category all of last year for Dalton. So he's having a great year on long passes. And the Bengals D in that same category, they have 6 picks on passes that travel more than 15 yards past the line of scrimmage before they reach their intended target. That's tied for second best in the NFL. So Brian Hoyer can't really do the same, or we can't expect him to do the same against the Cincinnati defense. So I think the Bengals can put up points. And again, I just don't think the Texans can keep up with them, although you make a good point that the Texans' defense ought to be credible. But if you're on the field for as long as you're on the field with an inept offense, even the best defenses become very mediocre.
Thank you, Gil. It just leaves us with the five best bets this weekend. Gil, spin us through your five picks.
First pick is going to be, and I want you to hold your nose for this one, Dave, we're taking the Detroit Lions.
Wow.
The Detroit Lions getting 11.5 at Lambeau Field. The Lions have lost 24 in a row at Lambeau, but you're giving me 11.5. The division game, the Lions are coming off a bye. They looked miserable at Wembley 2 weeks ago. But they've not only are they coming off the bye, though, they've fired so many in the front office. Their GM is gone. Heads are rolling. So I think if there's ever going to be a spot where the Lions show up this season, this is the one. And if you're giving me 11.5 against a division rival, I'm taking the Lions. Let's hold our nose. That's our first pick. Number two, Carolina. I'm going to take Carolina and give 5.5 at Tennessee. We shouldn't be fooled that Tennessee is any good, even though they looked good against the Saints last week. The Saints' defense is a sieve. Carolina's defense is quite the opposite. I think Marcus Mariota is going to come down to earth, and I like Carolina on the road, giving the 5.5. Pick number three, we talked about them already, the Dolphins getting 6 at Philly. Pick number four, we talked about Arizona getting 3 at Seattle. And pick number five, we talked about Cincinnati giving 10.5, hosting the Texans. So it is the Lions, the Panthers, the Dolphins, the Cardinals, and the Bengals.
Superb. Just to go back to the Panthers pick as well, I was looking at the Panthers, and it almost looks like a trap, doesn't it? I thought that would be breaking the touchdown barrier in terms of the spread there against the Tennessee Titans.
I think there's a lot of respect for Marcus Mariota.
Yes.
I think people like him, and you know, look, he's thrown 4 touchdown passes a couple times as a rookie, which is really mostly unheard of, and he's been really good. And they have, you know, he got hurt, so he's not running a lot. So he's become a little more one-dimensional. I think the Panthers' defense knows that. But, yeah, the Saints' defense last week, and keep in mind, one of those touchdowns was just bizarro off the deflection to Delanie Walker. But the Panthers' defense doesn't play, and I think Mariota's going to have some issues here. So I like the Panthers to go 9-0 and cover in the process. Panthers are for real, and you know what? Their schedule is easy. So besides the Patriots, I would give them an edge over the Bengals in terms of their ability to get an undefeated season.
Superb. Thank you, Gil. As per usual, fantastic. Remember, you can follow Gil on Twitter. Check out all his podcasts at Beating the Book. You can follow myself at D. Kellner. And myself and Gil will be back next week for week number 11. Thank you, as ever, Gil. A pleasure speaking to you, and we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it, as always.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.